our guards and precautions, Pancho has gotten away from us. She's outside. But the radiation storm, the junior aide said aghast, she'll be killed out there. Suddenly, Nobu felt all his anger dissolve. All the tension that had held him like a vise for the past several hours faded away. He laughed. He threw his head back and laughed aloud, while his two aides gaped at him. "Killed out there," he said to them. "Not likely. Not Pancho. We couldn't hold her in here with 1,000 guards. Don't think that a little thing like a solar storm is going to stop her." His two aides said nothing, even though they both thought that their master had gone slightly insane.
"Radiation warning," the suit repeated for the umpteenth time. "Radiation level exceeding maximum allowable. Get to shelter immediately." Pancho made a silent promise to herself that when she got back to Cellini, she would rip the voice synthesizer out of this goddamn suit and stomp on it for an hour and a half. The color splashed across the left side of her bubble helmet was bright pink now. "I'm absorbing enough radiation to light a concert hall," she thought. Unbidden, the memory of Dan Randolph's death from radiation poisoning rose up in her mind like a ghostly premonition of things to come. She saw Dan lying on his bunk, too weak to even lift his head, soaked in sweat, gums bleeding, hair coming out in bunches, dying while Pancho looked on, helpless, unable to save him. "You got a lot to look forward to," she growled to herself. Her loping stride had slowed to a walk, but she was still doggedly pressing forward across the outer perimeter of the dome. "You don't really appreciate how big something is until you have to walk around it," she told herself. "Everything always looks bigger on foot." And there it was. Around the curve of the dome, she saw one, then two, and finally three spacecraft sitting on concrete launch pads. She recognized the little green one that had brought her here from the astro base, about 100 clicks away. Would they have guards placed around those birds? Pancho asked herself, without slowing her pace toward the launch pads. "Nah," she answered, "not in this storm. That'd be suicide duty. Not even Yamagata would ask his people to do that." Then she added, "I hope." Aside from the splotch of color in her helmet and the automated voice's irritating, repetitive warning, there was no visible, palpable sign of the radiation storm. Pancho was striding along the rocky, barren lunar crest, kicking up slight plumes of dust with each step. Outside the nano-machined fabric of her soft suit was nothing but vacuum, a vacuum thousands of times rarer than the vacuum just above Earth's atmosphere, nearly 400,000 kilometers away. Instinctively, she glanced up for a sight of Earth, but the black sky was empty. Only a few of the brightest stars shone through the heavy tinting of her helmet. "You can always see Earth from Cellini," she said to herself. "Maybe that's an advantage over this polar location that we hadn't realized before." She started to hurry her pace toward the rocket hopper, but found it was too tiring. "Uh-oh," she thought. "Fatigue's one of the first signs of radiation sickness." She knew the vacuum out here wasn't empty. A torrent of subatomic particles was sleeting down upon her, mostly high-energy protons. The suit absorbed some of them, but plenty of others were getting through to smash into the atoms of her body and break them up. When she glanced at the color swatch in her helmet, though, it had gone down from bright pink to a sultry auburn. "Jeeps," Pancho exclaimed silently. "Radiation level's going down." "Radiation warning," the suit repeated yet again. "Radiation level exceeding maximum allowable. Get to shelter immediately." "I'm going," Pancho growled. "I'm going." "Radiation's decreasing. The storm's ending. Maybe I'll make it through this after all." But then she thought that Yamagata might send some goons out to the launch pad if the radiation level's gone down enough. Despite the aches in her legs and back, she pushed herself to walk faster.
Humphrey's mansion, on the roof. Smoke was billowing up through the ventilator that Fuchs had smashed open.
The guards down in the garden below pointed to it. One of them pulled a handheld from his tunic pocket and started talking into it.
"We've got to get off this roof and out to the exit hatch," Fuchs thought. "And quickly, before they get all their guards out here and we're hopelessly surrounded."
Turning, he saw that Nodon was sitting by himself, his eyes open. He looked groggy. But at least he was conscious.
"Nodon," Fuchs whispered, hunkering down beside the wounded man. "Can you walk?"
"I think so, Captain." Nodon's right shoulder had stopped bleeding, but the charred spot in his coveralls showed where the laser beam had hit him. The arm hung limply by his side. Turning to Ermajago, Fuchs gestured toward the two guards below.
"Get those two when I give the word. Sanja, help me carry Nodon."
Sanja nodded wordlessly while Ermajago checked the charge on the pistol in her hand. As Fuchs slid one beefy arm around Nodon's slim waist, he saw the two guards looking up in their direction. One of them was still speaking into his handheld.
"Now," he shouted, hauling Nodon to his feet.
Ermajago shot the one with the handheld squarely in the forehead, then swung her aim to hit his companion in the chest. They both tumbled into the bushes that lined the garden walkway. With Sanja helping to support Nodon, Fuchs yelled, "Jump!" And all four of them leaped off the roof to land with a thump amid the shrubbery that lined the mansion's wall.
"Lunar gravity," Fuchs thought gratefully. "On Earth, we would have broken our bones."
Half dragging Nodon, they started up the bricked path, hobbling toward the heavy airtight hatch that was the only exit from the grotto. Fuchs heard shouts from behind them. Turning his head, he saw a trio of guards boiling out of the mansion's front door, pistols in their hands. A tendril of pale gray smoke drifted out of the open door.
"Stop while you're still alive," one of the guards shouted. "There's no way you can get out of here."
"Ermajago, help Sanja,"
Fuchs commanded, slipping the wounded man out of his grasp and dropping to one knee. He snapped a quick shot at the three guards who scattered to find shelter in the shrubbery. Fuchs fired at them until his pistol ran out of power. One of the flowering shrubs burst into flame and a guard leaped out from behind it. Running back to the others, Fuchs yelled,
"Give me your guns, quick!"
They obediently dropped their pistols into the path, hardly breaking stride as they carried the wounded Nodon toward the hatch.
"Nodon's the only one who knows the emergency codes to open the hatch," Fuchs thought. "He'd better be conscious when we get over there or we're all dead."
He ducked behind the sturdy bole of a tree and peered up the pathway. No one in sight. They could be crawling through the shrubbery, Fuchs realized. He checked the three guns at his feet. Picking the one with the fullest charge, he began spraying the greenery, hoping to ignite it. Some of the plants smoldered but did not flame. Fuchs growled a curse as his pistol died. He picked up the next one.
In his bedroom, Humphreys was screaming at his security chief.
"What do you mean the whole house is burning? It can't burn, you stupid shit! The firewall petitions!"
"Mr. Humphreys," the chief snapped stiffly, "the partitions have failed. The intruders opened a ventilator shaft and the fire is spreading through the eaves beneath the roof. You'll have to abandon your suite, sir, and pretty damn quick, too." Humphreys glared at the screen. "I'm leaving," said the chief. "If you want to roast, go right ahead." The phone screen went blank. Humphreys looked up at Farrar. "This can't be happening," he said. "I don't believe it." She was at the door, ready to make a break for it. "At least Fuchs and his crew have left the house," she said, trying to stay calm. "They have? That's what the guards outside reported. Remember? They're having a firefight out there right now." "Firefight?" Humphreys couldn't seem to get his mind working properly. Everything was happening too fast, too wildly. "We've got to get out, Martin," she insisted, almost shouting. Humphreys thought it was getting warm in the bedroom. "That's my imagination," he told himself. "This whole suite is insulated, protected. They can't get me in here." Something creaked ominously overhead. Humphreys shot a glance at the ceiling, but it all looked normal. He looked around wildly. "The whole building's on fire," he heard the security chief's voice in his mind. "I pay that stupid slug to protect me," Humphreys said to himself. "He's finished. I'll get rid of him permanently." "How do you open this hatch?" Farrar asked.